joined by Dan Lobby at Cleveland.com. Dan, thanks for taking a couple minutes, man.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, it's been an eventful May 7th, and I love that it is just that. But this is the life with Odell Beckham Jr., right?
Right. I mean, this is what happens when you have a star in town. Everybody should remember that from when LeBron James was here for all those years. So, Odell Beckham Jr. is a bona fide superstar, and I think fans are realizing just how big of a star he is.
You know what's amazing about that is that not many people are making the parallels between LeBron and OBJ. Mainly, I think it's because with LeBron, you knew he had all the headaches and you knew he had everything attached. But then you also knew a finals appearance was at the end of the long road. With Odell, we don't know what this will be, and his postseason experience is one wild card loss.
Yeah, exactly. And then you look at the fact that outside of quarterback in the NFL, having a superstar doesn't really guarantee you what it does in the NBA. And, you know, LeBron was, you know, the best player in the league. Some people would say the best player in the history of the game. So that's a little different than Odell, but the star power is certainly similar.
So when you saw Odell's comments at GQ, one, I thought, Dan, I was like, all right, well, that makes sense. He's hooked up with GQ. The guy loves fashion. Of course, he's going to be at the Met Gala as well. Didn't know Tom Brady was going to talk to our entire team, but I guess that's on the docket for this offseason. But, Dan, when you saw those comments, did you think, pump the brakes, or did you think, okay, let's go?
You know, I didn't have a big problem with the comments. You know, the Patriots thing is a little over the top just because we know what the Patriots have been for 20-some years. That's so much bigger than just winning on the field. It's been this culture that they've built there. But, I mean, listen, the point of this thing is to win championships, right? That's why all these guys do this. That's why there's a draft every year. That's why there's free agency. The goal is to do things to win championships, and the Browns are at that point. So I don't have a problem with Odell, you know, talking big about wanting to win championships. That's what every player on this team should want.
Shouldn't people be happy that he said he wanted to take a bullet for Jarvis? I hear that, and I'm like, well, that sounds awesome. I can name two people on planet Earth I would take a bullet for, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to their friendship. And I think, you know, sometimes these friendship stories can get a little overblown, but it really does seem like theirs is genuine. And it's a big reason why Odell is here. Obviously, he didn't choose to come here. He was traded here. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, part of the appeal of him being here now is Jarvis Landry was in the building. I think that really makes, obviously Jarvis Landry is making $75 million over 5 years, which is a lot for him. But, you know, if he played a role in kind of greasing the skids to get Beckham here, I think that money is well spent.
Did you make anything of the timing of this? Because we just spent this past weekend dissecting Freddie Kitchen's comments where he even said no veteran player would think this way. And then they slap Greedy Williams on the hand and say, don't do that. And then OBJ comes out here and does that.
Yeah, and the timing is interesting. I'm actually curious maybe when the interview happened. I don't remember if they said that in the article or not. But, you know, I'd kind of be curious about that. The reality with these things is, you know, these guys are doing these things for the magazines to, you know, kind of make headlines. And that's the era we're in. I mean, this interview now doesn't just appear in GQ. Now those comments are, you know, going to be in the Plain Dealer, the Beacon Journal, on ESPN.com, and then, you know, any other major, you know, local and national outlet. These comments are going to be everywhere. I mean, you guys are talking about them on 92.3. It's a topic. So, you know, the goal of these things is to kind of create these sort of viral quotes and things like that.
Joined by Cleveland.com's Dan Lobby here on 92.3 The Fan and the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Dan, yesterday we had Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times on, and in regards to Gerald McCoy, he said, quote, he's looking to get out of Tampa Bay. I think it probably comes to a head this week sometimes. I know that Gerald thinks he plays for another 3 to 4 years. Wherever he goes, they're going to get a guy that is very, very motivated. Gerald McCoy to the Browns, would that be appetizing for you?
I think it would be a nice veteran interior presence. A guy that, yeah, obviously they signed Sheldon Richardson. They have Larry Ogunjobi. So, you know, McCoy would come here with a reduced role behind those guys. But if you were willing to do that, you know, the price isn't too high for, you know, how long you would have him on the roster. Obviously this team can afford to throw a little money around over the short term. So I think it would be interesting to have that veteran presence, have a little insurance behind those two defensive tackles. And, you know, like you said, that motivation thing, it's huge. To have a guy who feels like he's been spurned, who's now in an uncomfortable situation where he wants to go prove people wrong, I don't think that's ever a bad thing on the football field.
All right, I think that was the layup. Now I'm going to give you the hard one, okay?
Okay.
All right, so CBS Sports had Eric Berry as a landing spot for the Browns. I don't know what you would pay Eric Berry. I don't love it if it's double digits as far as the millions are concerned, but three games over the previous 32, but we know he's a five-time Pro Bowler. Is that a solid decision for the Browns if they went that route, or does it just come down to financials?
I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. You went out and you signed Morgan Burnett. You paid him to be a starter. You obviously already have Demaryius Randall at free safety. And then you spent a fourth-round pick on Sheldrick Redwine, a guy out of Miami who's kind of a hitter. He can play a little bit of corner. I don't really see a fit here for Eric Berry. Now, that doesn't mean that John Dorsey maybe wouldn't consider it, but I don't think it would make a lot of sense if it costs a lot of money to bring him in, considering the resources they've already put in that position, and again, considering they've already paid a veteran guy like a starter in that spot.
Dan, I checked out your stuff at Cleveland.com from over the weekend, as I always do, because you're a must-read. And you had a profile in there, your number three nugget, on the Scottish Hammer. I don't know nearly enough about the Scottish Hammer as I should, but when you talk about the fact that he had to buy his own NFL balls and then was popping them, I feel like that might be somebody I need to get familiar with.
Yeah, he spent like $100 a ball to buy real NFL footballs in the lead-up to, I don't want to say the draft process because he didn't get drafted, but kind of as he was getting ready to work out for teams and things like that. And he popped, I think it was three of the four, something like that. And the Browns and 49ers both sent him a total of 12 footballs. So I think they sent him six each. And he's been using those now, or he was using those to kind of work out and stay ready. So, the problem there is he came to him do anything because he was injured, and it wasn't anything serious, but they didn't really want to take any chances with him, which tells you that he's going to be around into the summer. Britton Colquitt had a nice year as a punter, but if they like this kid and they like his upside, hey, we might have a punting competition at training camp.
Isn't that odd? We might have a punting competition. We have a actual kicker competition, because I don't know what to make of Austin Seibert. I know you've seen the stats about what he did at Oklahoma, but then you go on YouTube and you see the kid making 70 yarders as if it's just like a layup for Steph Curry. It's amazing.
I just think the only stat that matters with him is he was a fifth-round pick. I think that's the equivalent to picking a wide receiver in the second or third round. I think if you pick a kicker in the fifth round, you're saying that unless this guy shows up to training camp and is a complete disaster, you're seeing him as the kicker for this football team. So they'll let Greg Joseph compete. And like I said, if Seibert's a complete disaster out there and really struggles, maybe they have to kind of burn that asset. But I think if you pick a kicker in the fifth round, you're saying it's this guy's job to lose.
Dan, when I was looking at trying to figure out how many new players we're going to have from the defense, because I'm trying to wipe away the Greg Williams era as fast as I possibly can, how many do you project and see? Because I was going through, obviously you have Richardson, obviously you're going to have Olivier Vernon, Morgan Burnett's new, even though I think he's replacement level at best, but he counts, still none the same. Yeah. And then obviously I think Greedy Williams will start, but I'm not 100% on that. But are we somewhere in the 4 to 5 ballpark, somewhere around there?
You know, linebacker is the big area to watch. I think that I thought all offseason that anything is on the table at linebacker. And then one of the first moves they made, of course, was to cut Jamie Collins, which wasn't a surprise. But I think if a guy like Sione Takitaki comes in and is really impressive, I think he's going to make a run at one of those linebacker jobs. They really like that style of linebacker, downhill guy, a guy who can hit, kind of plays with his hair on fire. They really like that style of linebacker. And I think it's very telling last year when they signed Michael Kendricks late in the spring. I think it was in June they brought in Michael Kendricks, and that didn't work out for non-football reasons, of course, but I think he was going to play and play a lot. And I think that tells you something about how they feel about this current group of linebackers. It really hasn't changed since then. They're trying to push that group, create competition in that group, and I wouldn't rule anything out at that position.
So for the average fan that's watching the linebackers and watching the group as it tries to come together, I heard a quote from Dorsey say, it doesn't matter between the Sam, the Will, and the middle, and the Mike, excuse me, he just wants guys that can play, right?
Yeah, and John Dorsey really does take the approach at certain positions where it's like, we're going to put you in this spot and see if it works. And if it doesn't, we're going to try you someplace else. He does it on the offensive line all the time. We're going to start you at tackle, and then we'll move you inside. And I think with the changing – what we're seeing with the changing faces of defense is you aren't going to have three linebackers on the field a lot. And I think he understands that. He talked about it pre-draft, that you need to have a certain number of corners. And you watch that playoff game against Baltimore when the Chargers had – you know, what did they play? 7-8 defensive backs most of that game. We're in an era where you don't have three linebackers on the field very often. And John Dorsey has been paying attention to that stuff.
Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com. We appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you down the road, man. Thanks so much. This was great.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Dan Lobby, check him out again. Follow him on Twitter at Dan_LABBE. I think he's one of the best, and I think he's very, very good at what he does. And it has me excited.